Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Noir on the Radio. I'm your tech for tonight, Pam Stack, normally with Authors on the Air. Tonight, we have a very special program called Dames in the Dark on Noir on the Radio. I hope you're all ready, because I'm going to introduce your hosts for tonight, and that would be the lovely Marietta Miles, author of Route 12, who's getting ready to come on the show right now. You're on, Dame. Take it away.
Thank you. Thank you. First of all, I wanted to say a very big thank you to Mr. Steve Loudon. He helped us get a lot of awesome music together for tonight, and I wanted to make sure I gave him a big shout out. He's a writer, a drummer, and he's a tech nerd. He has got an awesome blog. It is Drumming and Writing in Los Angeles at Bad Citizen Corporation, and a brand new book out called Crosswise. So please check it out. And I'm now going to introduce to you our co-host, Michelle Sherlock Eisler.
Hi,
guys. Somebody wants to know about her. Say hi. That's right. Michelle is on here because she is probably one of the greatest patrons of the written arts for noir and the new dark fiction scene. She has been a very important part in a lot of young writers' time. She goes to BoucherCon, the Noirs at the Bar, and as soon as she finds a good writer, she supports them. She takes that book, she puts it in as many people's hands as she can. She happens to also, I love this part about you, she volunteers for the public library, everybody, in case you didn't know about that. But we spoke with Eric Beatner earlier, and he gave me something about her, and I wanted to, she cares, and her enthusiasm spreads it like a virus. She's the Typhoid Mary of my books, infecting more people than I could ever on my own. Welcome, everybody. Typhoid Mary. Here's Michelle.
Oh, thank you so much. That was so sweet. Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'm awful at talking to other people, but I am very good at reading everybody's books and pushing them into other people's hands. And, yes, I do that. I do that too much.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all.
No, not too much.
Not at all. And just to let you guys know, some of the music that we were listening to that Steve got together for us, I know that Michelle knows who that was. That was actually Tom Pitts, who's with us tonight. And it was a song that is anybody want to guess the name of the album? Anybody? Nope. Matt Dillon is the name of that album, everybody. Mm. If you'd like to go out and get it, we will probably buy you a beer because I think it's really hard to find, if I'm not mistaken. Right, Tom?
It is pretty much impossible to find. It's from another era, another century, the pre-CD era. So, good luck finding that disc of wax. But,
awesome.
It's still I don't know if it still holds up, but thank you for giving it a toss anyway.
Oh, no, we love it. We love it. And I actually had another song lined up, and we will be playing that at another time. I think everybody's going to dig it. Just to let anybody know about Tom's other side, he is also an author. He has written Piggyback, Hustle, and Knuckleball. He is acquisitions editor at Out of the Gutter Books and the editor at Slash Fiction Offensive. And to let a few of you guys know, he's very tied into several of the authors who are on tonight. And he is actually going to be doing us a favor for one of our authors. He is also a host here on Authors on the Air for Skid Row Chatter. And if you guys get a moment, go back into the catalog, into the history over at Authors on the Air, and listen to his interviews with Les Edgerton and Joe Lansing. They were amazing. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention, he has got a story in a brand new anthology that is coming out, and it is called Unloaded, Crime Writers Writing Against Guns. Tom Pitts joins Eric Beatner, Joe Clifford, Steve Loudon, Joe Lansdale, and Joyce Carol Oates. And all of these stories are about crime not using guns. And they come from both sides of the debate, so you have the chance to read it without feeling like you might want to go rip your hair out or anything like that. But it's an awesome anthology with amazing writers, and he's got that coming up. And also proceeds from the purchase or the sale of this book will go to ceasefireusa.org. So look that up if you want to. CeasefireUSA.org. All that to say, here's Tom Pitts. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks. I Unloaded, of course, brought to you by the fabulous people at Down and Out Books, who seem to have their finger in everybody's pie, so to speak, these days.
Oh, hey.
Anyway, I'm here. I mean, I was tapped at the last minute here for I think maybe two reasons. One, you know, Nikki Murphy is in the UK, so she's probably sound asleep right now. But her contribution. Pardon me?
We got a Canadian instead, so that's awesome.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's still a queen on the money, and that's the important thing. The sun is still not setting on the empire, but it's set on Nikki Murphy's portion of the empire right now. But I think the thing is, the story that I'm going to read in place of her, Daddy's Girl, was something that one of the first stories that Joe Clifford and I took on at Flash Fiction Offensive, and it's such a perfect piece of Flash that, you know, not only did we nominate, I believe, for a Derringer that first year, but it's also something we refer to when you know we're going back and forth with someone who's trying to get a story in, and they're trying to put too much in the Flash, or they're taking the wrong approach, or they're, you know, it's such a great example of really how it's done in our view. And anyway, I mean, there's plenty of great Flash out there, but this is a shining example of a great piece, and a great piece in first person. Although it is written from a first person perspective from a female, and so you're going to have to stretch your imagination a little bit, hear my gravelly voice read it out.
No.
Great voices, Tom.
No.
Yeah. Well, you can all do that. Rob can imagine what I'm wearing. Well, in the meantime. So are we ready for it? Is this the portion where I just launch in?
Let's go.
Yes.
There you go.
All right.
Yep.
It's Daddy's Girl by Nikki Murphy. Daddy, I call out from a safe distance just in case. The man in the denim jacket and faded cord sitting at the blackjack table and looking like he's gotten used to handing over his chips turns around. It's him. Christ. After nearly 25 years and so many false leads, I've finally found my daddy. I feel a vibration in my pocket and I nip around the corner of a line of slot machines. And I peer around as I retrieve my cell. The man has a puzzled look on his face, but he soon returns to his game. One of the doll-faced hostesses offers him a beer on the house, and he takes two. He won't be going anywhere soon. Yes? Hey, chicken, how's it hanging, baby? Shit, it's Apollo. Why didn't I check the caller ID? Hey, pal, I'm just taking a break, I say. Well, here's the thing, chicken. I hear you ain't been working for a couple of hours. I hear him take a deep drag and exhale slowly. Could be even more than that. That may be true. I've been combing Cleopatra's Casino since dinner, and Vegas since forever. Everyone ends up in Vegas. Some never leave, just like me. I'll get back to it, baby, I say. It's just nothing, chicken, Paula says pleasantly. Now get back to work and stop moping. Time is money, my money. He takes another drag. If you don't wanna, remember what happened to Lola. Everyone remembers what happened to Lola. She slackened off, tried to get herself a real job because of her little girl, and she got visited by two friends of Apollo's, and now wears a permanent smile from ear to ear. Okay, baby, I wanna, I say. Good girl, Apollo says. Now go suck me some dick and lie back and pretend it's me humping you, and remember who keeps you safe around here. I return the cell phone to my pocket. Shit, stop shaking. Calm down. I look around again, just in time to see him getting up and heading towards one of the exits. Seems like Lady left on his side tonight. I tail him. It's not difficult. He's walking the slow, careful walk of the slightly pissed. Once outside, he finally pauses by a dumpster, slumps against it. He burps loudly. I go up to him and gently touch his arm. Hey, Daddy. It's me, I say. It's Rosie. Your little... He stares at me with unfocusing eyes. What the fuck? His breath stinks of beer and nachos. His belly strains at his T-shirt, faded AC/DC transfer, stained with something bad. You remember me, I persist. You used to read me stories at bedtime. Bathe me and Cassie when Mom was out working. sorry, lady, I think you want someone who gives a shit. He's sobering up quickly, confronted by a mad woman who's making no sense whatsoever. He shakes his head, snorts, and tries to shuffle away. The redness descends on me. My scalp starts to burn, and my heart is pounding like a drummer on acid. I grab the photo out of my back pocket and thrust it in his face. That's me and Kathy, I cry. The last time we were happy, when you used to love us. You tell us we were your only girls, and that no one made you feel like we did. We didn't tell Daddy. We didn't tell. Now he's scared, eyes wide, and he's trying to run, but I kick him hard in the leg, and he goes down. I don't know. I didn't know Mom would come home early. I didn't know she'd throw you out. You shouldn't have left us, you fucking bastard. I stand over him and raise my foot and bring it down over and over and over just to stop the screaming. Wumpf. That's for Mom, who cried herself to sleep for weeks, steadily drank herself into a stupor and out of a job, and then suddenly stepped out, then calmly stepped out in front of a train at the Mayhew Crossing one bleak Thanksgiving. Wumpf. That's for Cassie, who felt so mixed up and confused that she got herself pregnant by the pig who snuck his hand up her knickers and now has five naughty brats at Taylor's home. Of Craftsville and the husband who beats her on a regular basis just to remind her how lucky she is. And the final heel in the face is for me, one of the hardest working whores in business, who has to keep turning tricks before her face and body give up on her because she knows no other fucking trade and because somewhere, somehow, a guy has Daddy loved her. I turn over the sniveling wreck with my toe. Better to make this look like a robbery. And I feel inside his jacket and pull out a wallet. I take the bills and shove them in my pocket. I pull out his driver's license. So he calls himself Mike LaSalle now. And then I check his date of birth. Oh, no. Fuck. If this is right, he's only 12 years older than me. He can't be my daddy. But he looks like him. Doesn't he? I turn to Daddy, Mike, and I can't be sure, but I think he stopped breathing. Shit. Not again.
Yay.
Sorry.
I know I'm not supposed to.
That's why I wanted to be on the show tonight.
I wanted to talk to her about this.
Well, it's a shame she can't be here to field some questions because I think not only did the story I think it had some other accolade for it aside from just the regular pass on the back. I think it won some sort of other award and got her into a few other doors, and I really hope she continues what she does.
Yes.
She's got a great talent, and as proven by the story. And thank you very much for letting me read it. I was a little bit nervous doing it, but it seemed to have really worked out fine.
You did great.
I think having a fella
read it made it very different. I honestly liked it, having a fella reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I wanted her on here is because she's far too shy and doesn't get out there and promote herself. I was going to make her.
I didn't want to just come on and solely just plug my radio show Skid Row Chatter with Tom Pitts or my book Hustle that's coming out next Tuesday with Down and Out Books, and I just wanted to do the story.
Absolutely.
I have to jump in my car and drive to San Francisco, so I'm gonna probably have to cut this short. So thank
Tom,
you again.
Before you leave, Tom, next month, Skid Row Chatter, who's your guest?
Mr. Joe Clifford. It's going to be the grudge match.
Make sure you hug him.
Okay. And
I've known Joe since long before
the
writers. It's going to be fun.
Well, just so that you know, since Nikki couldn't be here, we're going to schedule a podcast so that it coincides with her time over in London, and you will hear Marietta interviewing her.
Yes.
So, but thanks for filling in. I really appreciate it, Tom. Have a great night.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you so much, Tom.
Good night. Kick ass, and I'll be listening in the car on the way home. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right, everybody. And now we're actually going to move on, and I'm bringing in our new friend. Her name is Susie Henry. She is a poet and a photographer, and she has been published in Walking is Still Honest and was a featured femme in the spring-summer issue of Clockwise Cat. She is a wonderful, passionate poet, and she lives very close to Miss Pam, and she seems to get a lot of her inspiration from the surroundings of the Florida areas that she lives. She's published two collections of poems, A Song for Me in the 2013 My Perplexing Complexity. Reading No Ordinary Aphrodite is my very good friend, Susie Henry.
Yay.
Thank you very much. She's no ordinary Aphrodite. She's a demon and a doll on the floor of the club, dressed in a checkered past and a grim analogy of love and squalor. She loves like thunder at midnight and laughs like snowflakes on wool.
The end. You did a beautiful job. And how many drinks did you think you had to have?
I actually have had no drinks.
You're so great. Good job. That was beautiful. I loved it. I loved it.
It was wonderful.
And I need to know, what are you working on right now? Because you're one of the people I want to push and have you do a lot more work.
I actually don't have anything formally in the works right now, but I'm always looking, thinking, writing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you just never know. I'm just looking for my next home for publishing.
Now, do you prefer photography or do you prefer poetry? Which one, or do you go through Fonsworth?
They really go hand in hand for me. Because my view on poetry, the way I write it and the way I feel it, is that it's more a snapshot in time, much like a photograph.
So it's quick and it catches the memory and it catches the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's just a glimpse. It's a still shot of a moment in time for me.
Is there a place where we can see your photographs?
I do have a photography page on Facebook.
Do you? Yes, tell us that.
Yes, and I will get the address for you, and leave it on.
Actually, I was going to tell everybody, it's a good moment for you to bring this up. Tomorrow, or hopefully by the end of the night tonight, any link or page that is mentioned this evening that is pertinent, things like Flash Fiction Offensive, Out of the Gutter, Shotgun Honey will be talked about, Signed Tingler Magazine. I'm going to have those links and all pages set up for you in the on the Dames in the Dark event page, so you guys can access that and go look at whatever you want to look at in this brand new world of creepy mysteries. So now Susie and I have actually been talking about a writer that's semi-new to us. She's amazing, and she gives me the willies. She reminds me quite a bit of especially the Bliss House books, let me tell you. First of all, this is Laura Benedict, everyone. Let's invite her on. Say hello.
Hi, everyone. I'm so glad to be here. I feel like a dame.
Hi, Laura. Oh, gosh, I'm so happy. Last time I saw you was at BoucherCon, so I'm so happy to hear you now.
It was at BoucherCon and at Noir de Bar, I think.
I did see, yes. But I made you take a picture with me, and Marietta took it. So.
All right.
I do that very well.
Yeah, and it was hard finding you. I mean, you were like going like panel to panel. You were busy.
Busy.
You were.
Now, her series, Laura Benedict has written a series. It's a kind of a gothic horror series. Mm-hmm. I don't actually know if I should call it a series, to be honest with you. Would you call it a series, Laura?
You know, it's funny. I only call it a series because the house is the continuing character.
And the house is awesome.
Technically, it's a series, although the books stand alone, which I really wanted it that way.
Laura and I were talking about it, and it reminded me of how in Shirley Jackson's We Have Always Lived in the Castle, or in The Haunting of Hill House, how the structure was part of, as you've said before, the star of the book. This is a scary house, and I was fascinated by how much research you must have done, because the house is built in 1878. One of your books takes place in 1957, one takes place present day, one takes place in 2008. I'm very curious to how much time do you spend on research?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because there's so many different kinds of research, mm-hmm. particularly the architectural research. Now, I tend to research as I write. You know, a lot of writers will research ahead of time, but my ADHD won't let me do that.
That's it. It works for us.
So I research as I go, and I had to do a lot of research into the 1950s. I wasn't quite born yet for Charlotte's story, and now The Abandoned Heart, which will be out in October, that starts in 1878. So it's been a very busy 120 something years.
Oh, so you're going back to the construction of the house.
Oh, yes.
Awesome.
Because that's where we find out why it's so haunted.
Was there something was there a house that, like made you think, oh, you know what, this is what I'm going to do? My book is going to start out like I'm going to use this house as the character. I mean,
well,
like, were you out somewhere and you saw a house and you said, I love this house, but wouldn't it be awesome if this house had, like, so many stories going on inside of it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's two things. It's funny that you all mentioned Shirley Jackson because she is my heroine. I adore her.
I know. I'm on a T-shirt with her.
I just love it. So, you know, and also, like, The Haunting of Hill House. That's another one where the house is really a main character. I mean, it is the central character. But the origins of Bliss House for me actually came to me in a dream.
Ooh.
And it was a dream of a house we lived in Lewisburg, West Virginia, where I dreamed that there were these long hallways behind the fireplace.
Ooh.
And that there were many rooms back there. So that is how it really started.
Oh, you gave me the willy.
Sorry.
Thank you. No, thank you. I love the willy.
Okay, so you got up. So you woke up from this dream, and you thought, okay, no, I'm going to write about this house. And then that's you just started writing it, and then you started doing research, or
well,
what happened?
Well, yeah, you know, I really actually, the house kind of came to me as a whole. You know, it was like I was able to walk in the front door and see it, you know, open to its grand dome and all the galleries around there. I mean, I kind of have been living in this house for like 6 years now, which
wow.
is kind of weird. And so if it feels like a real house, it's because it feels real to me. You know, I live in it in my head all the time, and I know that's weird, but hey.
No, not at all.
And I actually
was very curious. This sounds very silly, but do you think you've ever experienced something like that yourself?
I actually saw a ghost once, and I was at an old house on the campus of the Hill School up in Pennsylvania, which is a prep school, and I was by myself in the house, and I had gotten out of bed and made myself breakfast and was sitting in the bedroom, and I looked up, and there was this little old man standing in the hallway. And he was standing sideways, and he was holding his hat, and he just kind of tilted his head at me and smiled, and I blinked, and he was gone.
Oh, thank God.
I believe you 100%, and I'm so happy. We're, like, totally on my page right now. This is so good. I so believe that.
Freaked out, too. Now, actually, before I let too much time get away from us, I was hoping we had talked earlier about you doing some reading, and I was wondering if you would tell us what you're going to read.
Oh, I do. I have a little scene from Charlotte's story.
Yay.
And it's in the voice, the whole book is in the voice of Charlotte Bliss, who has married into Bliss House. And when Charlotte's story opens, her daughter has died. And so this is a little flashback for Charlotte. Are you ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I believed in ghosts long before I moved into Bliss House. I was 6 years old. Practical Noni had me collecting sticks in the backyard and putting them in the giant red wheelbarrow placed near the garage. 2 days earlier, there had been a tropical storm that had hung about for days offshore, sweeping one narrow arm inland for just a few hours, bringing down several trees and power lines in our little town in eastern Virginia. I was hot and cross and plagued by the mosquitoes that had appeared quickly after the rain. The air was languid, making my hair stick to my neck and my romper and my back. And though I was not usually rebellious, I'd taken off my shoes in spite of Noni's admonition that I should not. What I really wanted to be doing was eating the red velvet cake that she was making in the kitchen for my father's birthday. And so I was doing my chore reluctantly, trying to see how slowly I could walk across the grass to the wheelbarrow. I picked up a particularly large stick and was dragging it behind me, pretending I was a horse put to work like Black Beauty, when the wind picked up and the air turned markedly cooler. It was as sudden as if there had been some loud horn or thunderclap to announce it, and I stopped walking, wondering if there had been a sound. First, I looked into the sky, but then my eyes came to rest on a woman standing at the other side of the yard beside the wheelbarrow. She was a girl, really, and wore a belted robe the color of lemon custard, whose hem played lightly around her bare feet. I was surprised, but also terribly impressed that she was outside with bare feet, just like me. When she smiled and held out her hand, I realized she was the girl in all the pictures in my father's bedroom and in the one beside my bed. I knew her as mother, of course, barely 4 years old when she died, and her voice, her touch, and the way her face really looked had faded from my mind. Her blonde hair hung in untidy waves above her shoulders, and she was inhumanly pale, but I felt no fear. Dropping the stick, I hurried toward her, the grass cold and wet on my feet. The wind was loud in my ears, and it turned to a kind of static as though it were coming from a badly tuned radio. But as I got closer, I realized with some disappointment that she wasn't looking at me, but beyond me. When I looked back over my shoulder, I stumbled and fell, sprawling onto the grass in its minefield of small, sharp sticks. I lay there breathing hard, waiting, half hoping she would come to help me up. Then the wind was gone and Noni was standing over me. "You'd best get up or you'll be covered with chiggers." I stood still, watching the empty space where my mother had been as Noni brushed the dirt from my romper and legs and tut-tutted about little girls who should listen and keep their shoes on when they were told. Somehow I knew not to say anything about my mother to Noni, but that night I told my father. "Did she look happy?" he asked. It took me a minute to answer. "Could ghosts be happy or unhappy?" "Yes, I think so. I don't know why." He smiled at that but didn't offer any explanation. I was 10 years old before I overheard the truth about my mother. Already at school, a rotten older boy named Scott had cornered me in the coat room and told me that my mother had hanged herself in our garage, but I called him a liar and ran away. He had given voice to my own deepest fears. My father would never park the car in the garage, but kept a small bass boat he rarely used in there on a trailer. The rest of the space was filled with old tools and the equipment he used to keep our lawn looking neat. A few weeks after Scott's revelation, two of my father's older sisters, my aunts, were washing the dinner dishes in the kitchen, which looked out on the garage. When I heard one of them, Ruth, say my mother's name, I stopped. "He should have torn that down right after it happened. Gives me the willies just to look at it, and Lord knows the neighbors must want it gone. I'd faint dead away if I had to go in there." The second aunt, Beth, told her to lower her voice. "If Charlotte doesn't remember what happened, then it doesn't matter. It's only a garage. Roman says he can live with it, and that should be good enough for us, shouldn't it? It's his shame, and he has to suffer it. We're not going to change him now." She made a tiss-tiss sound that she often used to express her disapproval, and she disapproved of many things. "We can only pray that she doesn't have her mother's unstable nature. Here, pass me that pan to dry." If I had found our mother like that, I would have gone stark raving mad. It took me some moments to understand what they were saying, that I had been the one to discover my mother dead. That's it.
Oh, ooh, ooh, very good.
Wow. So good. So
wow.
Good.
Thanks for the gosh. Okay.
And well, I know that done. You said that all your books should stand alone, but I do recommend people read Blitz House first. I do, just to like get an idea of the main character.
Which is that?
I'm sorry? Did y'all not hear that?
House. Awesome.
Yes, absolutely.
That was so beautifully done. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you for letting me read.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you so much for reading for us.
And now I wanted to ask you one thing. Now, we have Cold Alone coming out, and that is, I'm checking my notes really quickly. I'm so sorry about that. Is that coming out? What day is that coming out, ma'am? Is it May or?
I have two novels, which are Bliss House and Charlotte's Story, that are out. I put out a short story called Cold Alone,
in August.
And then the last book will be The Abandoned Heart, which will be out October 10th. It'll be out in October.
That's a perfect time for it. Nice.
Yes.
Oh, very good. I'm sorry I didn't have my dates right, but Abandoned Heart, I'm very excited about that. So everybody, say thank you to Miss Laura.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank
I think we have a mess.
Really fantastic.
Right.
Terrific.
If you want to watch The Innocence of Deborah Kerr.
This is Pam, and I just wanted to remind everyone you're listening to Noir on the Radio with your hosts tonight, Marietta Miles and Michelle Turlock-Eisler. You're listening to some terrific flash fiction from The Dames in the Dark, and I also want to remind you that this is a trademark copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. Continuing with our program, we still have more dames and kind of a dame to come. Who's up next, Michelle Eisler?
Okay, hi. Well, are y'all ready for me?
You're ready
for
me.
I'm sorry?
We were going to bring in Miss Nancy Cole Silverman next. How do you feel about that?
Okay.
How do you think about that? Now, she is the author of the Carol Child series, starting out with Shadow of Doubt, Beyond a Doubt, and then the new book, which will be coming out May 24th, is Without a Doubt. This is a really fun series. Guys, this is something I think you're going to enjoy. It's glamorous, it's fast-paced, it's incredibly clever, and it's one of the creepiest death scenes you'll ever see. Nancy Cole Silverman, everyone.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a wonderful honor to be here.
Thank you so much for being with us. I know that I met you through Pam, and I had read one of your books before, and so I obviously started reading them again. One of the things I finally delved into your bio, and one of the things that I found very interesting, for those who don't know, you actually, Carol Childs, her character, she's an entertainment reporter for a big Los Angeles talk radio station. And
actually, she's a news reporter, not just entertainment.
A news reporter.
Sorry,
right. That's right. Now, the thing that's really interesting is Carol, that's her character, but Miss Nancy Cole Silverman she worked in radio for a very long time on both the talk radio side and the newsroom side. And this is a very big deal. And for anybody who doesn't know this, she retired as a general manager, and that is... that's a very big deal. That means this lady is smart. So everybody on your P's and Q's, you got it?
You're too good.
Yeah, you were there like 25 years, weren't you? Wasn't it like 25 years in
radio? I was in the industry altogether 25 years, right?
Okay.
And I retired as a general manager of a sports radio station, which is only proof that God has a sense of humor.
That is funny. I'm not a person who tends to bring up the differences so much as the likenesses, but in that industry, to be a lady and to be that, I'm going to say it, girl, powerful, is just amazing and awesome, and I got to give you big kudos. So,
this is Pam.
No, I think it's a matter of survival.
This is Pam. I want to say hi to Nancy, first of all. Nancy and I are old pals. She actually has filled in on some of our shows in the Authors on the Air Network.
You're wonderful,
Pam.
She's so
wonderful.
Boring.
But Nancy has also written a piece of flash fiction. Now, I know Nancy's books. I've read all of them. She's written a piece of flash fiction I think is going to blow your socks off when you read it.
Mm-hmm.
I was so stunned. I said, this is my little blonde Nancy? I can't believe that.
And it is very, very different.
Oh, Oh, it's wonderful.
Explain, Nancy, I found this so fascinating. Explain to them, to your fans, how this piece of pretty dark fiction, and it, guys, it was featured on Flash Fiction Offensive, Joe and Tom's site, which is
right.
pretty hardcore. It was actually an exercise for her Carol Child series. And if you would explain that to your fans, I think this is, it's a kick. So go ahead.
Actually, it was. In book two, Beyond a Doubt, there's a scene where Carol is doing a pub crawl. And when I was researching the pub crawls, and I live in Hollywood, so I decided I'd go down and find out what goes on Sunset Boulevard and Hollywood Boulevard, and I realized, you know, that you got to be pretty cool to get in some of these clubs. And you always hear stories about, you know, so-and-so, some big name is in an exclusive party at such and such a place. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the most part, if someone like myself were going to go, we wouldn't get in. I started to think about that, and I started to think, I'm not liking that.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be fun to write an exercise, and it you know, kind of as to... I thought I might use it in the book, and I did not. It went a much darker area, which I liked doing because I write a lot of short stories, and I had some fun with this. So I thought, okay, I'm going to take this in a darker, much darker, more fictional way.
You were scared.
So I had some fun with it. So, do you want me to read it to you?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So this is the pub crawl. I didn't think it was strange. I mean, Gail called to tell me Bethany was going to come with us. I'm not wild about her. She's not really one of us. But Gail said she had just broken up with her boyfriend, and, well, what are you going to do? Once a month on Saturdays, we get together. Usually it's just the three of us, Gail, Carrot, and me. We do a pub crawl down the boulevard. That's me in the picture in the center. My name's Allison. This is a selfie taken outside the Klee Club right before... You don't need to know about that. I'll tell you later. You see, the three of us, we've been friends since college. I suppose you could say we were close. I mean, close as women in L.A. can be anyway. We've seen each other through all our first loves, jobs, baby, divorce, and now, well, I guess murder. It all began innocently enough. All we wanted to do was have a little fun, check out some of the clubs on the strip, flirt a little, and let our hair down. We weren't really looking to hook up. Only thing is, the three of us, well, we didn't exactly fit in. We're not what you'd call the clubbing type. But then, if you're female and past 30 in L.A., who is? And the bouncer at the Sky Bar, I'll call him Jake, he was a real asshole. He wasn't going to let us in. Told Gail she was too fat, Karen she was too old, and Bethany was, well, she was maybe... But since she was with us, a bunch of basic bitches, he said, we could all just forget it. Do you even know who I am? I can still hear Karen jiggling her head side to side as she poked a finger into Jake's chest. That's how she is, loud and insistent. She was dressed in a sexy little black number that was cut as deeply to her navel as it was above her knees, and she was wearing a pair of those hot red Louboutins. And then, I guess because she was with us, Jake grabbed her finger and pointed it back at us. Look, babes, I know who you were, and what you're looking for inside, ladies, it isn't looking for you. Not here, not now, not any time. Why don't you just head on over to the marina? Why don't you try Jerry's Deli? That hurts. Everybody knows that on a Saturday night, the crowd at Jerry's is at least 65 and using a walker. I thought Jake's response to Bethany was cold. Truth be told, Bethany's a late 80s tweener. Way too young to be a boomer and too old to be an Xer. In the 90s, they'd done a bunch of low-budget TV shows and a few movies here and there. Unfortunately, she hadn't aged well, at least not by L.A. standards. But on a good night, she had facial recognition. She was somebody people would point to and think they knew, and the fact was, we were using her to get into clubs. But nobody deserved that. And that's when Bethany suggested we get even. Funny thing is, we were actually at Jerry's when we got the idea. It was close to 2 a.m., and there's this big-screen TV, and we're all watching a bunch of fraternity guys tossing this dwarf around. It's called dwarf tossing. Ever heard of it? Crazy idea, but then Bunny suggested something even weirder. Let's go back to the Sky Bar and teach Jakey Boy a lesson. I think it's because we were all drunk that everybody but Bethany, who was our designated driver and wasn't drinking, thought that the idea seemed innocent enough. Next thing I knew, we were back in the car. Bethany has this high-end black Lexus, an SUV that's tricked out with leather seats and tinted windows and one of those navigation devices that actually talks to you. So we go back to the Sky Bar, and there's Jake, just getting ready to leave. We followed him around the back. He didn't see us because we were in the car, and he was probably drunk as we were, or at least the three of us girls, because like I said, Bethany was driving and she wasn't drinking. But then she started to follow him real close-like, and she bumps him with a fender. It was just a little at first, but enough to startle him. So then she hangs back, and he starts walking, ignoring us. I think he thought he'd go away. After a few minutes driving real slow behind him, she speeds up and past him and nearly knocked him over. Then she yells out the window, "Asshole!" I thought it was over. We started laughing and high-fiving each other, but then she turned the car around and went back. This time she hit him head-on. He fell onto the front of the car and then off onto the ground. I thought that was it, that maybe she was done. I didn't think he was hurt that bad, but then she backed up and ran over him. Crunch! I could hear his body roll beneath the car. "Oh, my God, what did you do? Why did you do that?" We all started yelling at her, but Bethany, she just pulls forward and tells us to get out and put him in the back of the car. I don't know why we did. Maybe because we thought we were going to take him to the hospital. But somehow, we managed to get him in the back seat, and then he came too. He took a look at us and started mumbling something about us being his basic bitches, and Bethany yelled back at him, "Oh, yeah? Well, not for long." I had no idea what she was going to do, so I put my hand on her arm because I was riding shotgun, and I thought we ought to at least stop and discuss it. "What are you going to do?" I asked. But Bethany, she didn't even stop. She told Gail and Karen to bind his hands with a tie and then floored it. She said she had a place we could take him. "Don't worry, Jakey boy. You're going to be just fine." I'm not sure who asked. Maybe it was Jake. Maybe one of the girls, but somebody asked where we were going. It's kind of a blur. Bethany says it always is the first time. Next thing I know, we're headed up the 14 freeway, past Santa Clarita, the high desert. Then Bethany stops the car and tells Karen and Gail to push him out. "What? You can't push him out. Not that." Jake's going all kind of crazy in the back seat. His hands are tied and he's drunk, and maybe because he's concussed, he's not really much of a problem. So we get him out of the car and left him standing there by the side of the road, yelling about how we couldn't do this. Then Bethany starts yelling back, "Oh, yeah? Well, we know who you are, Jakey boy, and what you're looking for. Well, I'm sorry, but what's inside this car? It ain't looking for you." We all laughed, I guess because we were nervous, and then Bethany put her foot on the gas and we sped away. I remember looking out the window. It was black, the road kind of glossy and slick-looking, and the sky dark, and Jake was like this gray figure standing with his hands tied in front of him and his hair in his eyes. He looked a mess, but he was alive. Except the next day, I started to hear news about how somebody was driving along the interstate, and they see this thing lying next to the road, and they stop to find a body. It was Jake. He was dead. So, you see, that's how we got started. Our monthly pub crawls became opportunities to equal out the playing field. Find those mean-spirited men who didn't appreciate a real woman. We decided it was our responsibility to do what we could to thin the ranks of Neanderthals like you. So, in case you're wondering, that's why you're here. Let's see, what did you call it? Oh, yes, Botox bitches with champagne taste and stretch marks. Not quite like you call politically correct, is it? But don't worry. We won't leave you by the roadside. We know what we're doing now. Kind of like dwarf tossing. It gets better with time. I think you're the 10th or maybe the 11th. You'll have to excuse me now. I need to join the others. We've got a hole to dig.
Wow. Well,
that
done.
Is great. I want to go partying with you.
Hey.
Oh, that was great.
Great.
Let me know when you do that on staying home that night.
Pardon me, I didn't hear that.
Our designated Shella asked to make sure he is told when we're going out, so he's not out when we do this. Well,
I
done.
Assure you, I really don't partake in that.
I want to know what you were thinking the night that you went out and you said, "Okay, I'm going to write this story because this guy pissed me off."
You know, writers, I've always said the story picks the writer. I don't think you could go out and try to create something, but I think a story will tap you on the shoulder and it won't leave you alone. And actually, when I was out that night, I saw several women who were, you know, 45 plus, lovely gals who were out, and they were not being able to get into anything that was really kind of the hot clubs. And probably it was good for them. They might have been too shocked. But I thought, you know, somebody's got to kind of stand up for these women. And I had some fun with this. I've also been asked, I said, you don't really do that, do you? And I thought, you know, writers of murder mystery write about all kinds of murder. To my knowledge, we don't really murder anybody.
Yeah. So, Some of the nicest people.
Yeah, it's just easier to murder them in the book.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us. And
thank you so much,
Nancy. I love it.
That was great.
Thank you.
And now we are getting to actually Michelle's next big obsession. It is I'm going to let you take over. Do you want me to give out the book?
Go ahead and do what you were going to do. Go ahead. You can introduce Jennifer.
Awesome.
But...
This is Jennifer Hillier. Or Hill. I'm
Hello.
Trying to make her sound French. I'm so sorry, darling.
<That's okay.
laughs> She is the author of Freak, Butcher. And these are all wonderful-sounding books, aren't they?
So I'm the fangirl. I'm the fangirl.
Yes, total. And her new device of fear is Wonderland. So I'm going to pass it over to Ms. Michelle first and let her ask some amazing questions.
Yes, and I'm not going to jump on you or anything. But, Jennifer, it's Hillier because I was,
Hillier, yes.
Yes, it is Hillier because it rhymes with
Hillier.
Hillier. Yes.
Hillier. It does, yeah.
It's Hillier.
It does.
But no,
it looks
but
French. When you see it written down, it looks French, and so people, I mean, they say Hillier all the time.
I know.
Hillier.
Oh, fabulous.
But your ladies that you write about are like so badass, and
mm-hmm.
and that's one of the things. Like, I don't know if you want to read from one of your books first, or you want me to just like gush first, but it's up to you.
Well, I finagled Marietta into reading for me, so let her make that call.
And that was so sweet of her because I'm reading for her, I finagled a beer. And it balances out. It worked well for me. And why don't
Excellent.
I do this? I'm going to read first because much like our other ladies, I think you're going to be amazed once you hear these incredibly twisted things that come out of our beautiful little brain, and then put that to who's writing it. Laura actually said one time that she constantly gets questions about, you're the one who writes this? And I'm pretty sure Jennifer gets that, yes. So
yeah, wait to hear that.
And this is actually probably this is one of my favorite parts of Wonderland. So this is Under the Clown Museum. How's that for a start? Okay.
Yes.
Awoke with a start, and the first thing he was aware of was that his head was killing him. There was a dull pain throbbing from just behind his right ear, and reflexively he tried to touch it, but he couldn't. And the second thing he realized was that his arms were bound behind his back. The third thing he knew was that he was horizontal. He was lying on his side on a damp cement floor, and wherever he was, it was crazy cold. The fourth thing he became aware of was that there were eyes staring at him. Small, red, glowing eyes watching from across the cement floor. He wasn't sure if he was hallucinating or if they were really there, because when he tried to focus on who or what the eyes belonged to, brain would get fuzzy. None of this made any sense. The last thing he could remember was the Wonder Wheel. He had climbed that fucking thing sure as shit, but whether that had been today or yesterday or a week ago, he couldn't say. He had climbed it, yes, because he could remember the wind in his hair and the warm morning sun on his face, but how had he gotten back down and where was he now? That part was hazy. The eyes were still staring at him, not blinking, not moving. An animal of some kind, had to be. He continued to stare back, mainly because it was too dark to see anything else. And then he heard a scuffling sound. The eyes got closer, and then there was more scurrying, and the eyes got closer still. Squinting, Blake tried to focus, and after a few seconds he heard it. It was a grinding noise. the sound of teeth mashing against teeth, and then he saw it, a rat, about 5 feet away from his face. It was looking right at him, whiskers twitching, its long tail pink and hairless and dragging behind it. Its eyes glowed, watching him, as if it was contemplating its next move. It seemed almost cartoonishly large, which made him wonder if it was really there, or if this was some figment of his cruel imagination. Blake writhed where he lay and discovered that it wasn't just his arms that were bound. His legs were too. Panic kicked in, and all he knew was that he needed to get out of here. He needed to get away from the rat. He squirmed and wiggled, but even the slightest movement made the throbbing in his head worse. And then there was the music. It was impossible for him to tell which direction it was coming from, but the jangly tune was immediately recognizable. Welcome to Wonderland, or as we like to call it, Thunderland. There's something here for everyone, whether you're 3 years old or 80 years young. Stay, play, and have a great day. That's the Wonderland way. What the fuck? Okay, that freaked it. He was totally hallucinating. He must have hit his head on something climbing back down the wheel and knocked himself out, because now his brain was vomiting out random jingles. Every kid knew the song to Wonderland, and every kid could sing it by heart. The jingle hadn't changed in 20 years. This was all just a hallucination. Or maybe he was sleeping and having one of those lucid dreams he'd read about. And as soon as he woke up, the nightmare would begin to fade away. In a few minutes, he probably wouldn't even remember this. Wake up, he told himself, wriggling again, trying to ignore the hammering in his head that felt totally real. This is just a bad dream, and none of this is really happening. You fell and you hit your head. Soon you'll wake up and realize how stupid all of this is. Too many horror movies, you asshole. You should never have marathoned the Saw movies on Netflix last week. Now look at all this creepy shit in your head. So wake up, wake up, wake up. The rat made the ground grinding sound again. And while it wasn't particularly loud, the sound cut into Blake's thoughts like a cleaver. This was not a dream. As much as he wanted it to be, he knew it wasn't. He watched, helpless, as the rat began moving purposefully toward him, claws scraping against the cold cement, sharp little teeth gleaming under its whiskers. Opening his mouth, Blake took the deepest breath he could manage and screamed with all his might, but no sound came out. All he could hear was the scurrying, growing closer, and then closer still. Ta-da! Mm. Go, girl.
Very good.
You did great. You did
good
great, Marianne.
Thank you for doing that.
Well done.
Well, Jennifer.
You.
It's so nice to hear someone else read stuff. You know, it doesn't sound exactly the way it is in my head, but that's a good thing.
Oh, okay. Was it French in your head? Is that what it was? Should I have said that French? So now I know that Miss Michelle has a ton of questions for you, because she just adores you. First of all, when are your T-shirts coming up? Because we all need one. And then take it away, Michelle.
Okay. So, with me, I mean, I know everybody was talking about Wonderland. And that was like, okay, I wanted to read Wonderland. But I wanted to read, for some reason, I picked up The Butcher, and I wanted to read The Butcher first. So I read The Butcher, and it was like, are you kidding me? This is, like, so good.
Thank you.
Your female characters are so strong, and what I think, I don't know, I think I read so many books that what impresses me about you is that you start out strong. You grab people's attention, you keep their attention throughout the book, and you end it. You end it like nice, it's nice, crisp, clean. You walk away from that book like, damn, that was good. Hey, let's move on. What's the next book? Come on.
Yeah.
And then I want to go to the next book. And so I know I went out of order, but, you know, then I went to Wonderland, then I went back to Creep. I think it was even Creep, the first book, you had Jeffrey Deaver, like, giving you a blurb.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
So lucky
I mean,
to have that.
I know.
He's so nice.
Yeah,
he's always
like,
the
so
coolest
good.
Guy in the room. He's so nice.
It's true, but you're good. I mean, honestly.
Thank you.
So So seeing you, you know, like I see your stuff, and I see that you got like a little one, and you're like just a mom, and then you come out with these books, and it's like, oh my gosh. So what do you do? What do you do to get into the character to write a book, like the books you write?
Yes.
Well, you know,
music
I get asked that
to
question all the time, and I think anyone who's on the podcast tonight would probably answer it the same way. We write so that we don't do those things in real life, you know. I joke that, you know, if I'm ever not writing, that's when you need to get worried, because it's a really good way to exercise demons. It's a good way to, you know, to write about all the crap that we're not allowed to do. So there's so much freedom in that.
And you actually started out with Stephen King. You're a Stephen King fan, aren't you?
Yes, because back when I was a tween, they didn't have, you know, young adult fiction the way they do now, you know, where they address real themes and it's really good stuff. We had Sweet Valley High when I was growing up. And so I pretty much jumped from Sweet Valley High right up to Stephen King, which is what my mom used to read.
What a
jump. And it was a huge jump. And it was, you know, the very first book that I read was Pet Sematary.
Okay.
And she didn't tell me what it was about. And so the cover had a picture of a cat on it. And I thought, okay, it's a book about a cat. And it was not really a book about a cat.
It was.
Well, it was a demon cat.
But I think what you read when you're young, it sinks into you. And I think it really does shape who you become as a writer, for sure.
Okay. But you came up with, I think you made a comment one time that, like, someone was attacking you on social media for mentioning, like, they thought that you were saying ugly things about older people. And you're but you said, yeah, but that's not true. You know, like, this guy was based on a neighbor. And, I mean, like, you actually are out there and you see people and you think, I'm going to write.
What character was?
You know, I write, that was Edward Schenck in The Butcher. So he was my villain. He was my villain. And I write in really close third person. So all the thoughts that the characters are having are very intimate. And, the reader didn't like it at all. Was an older woman, not old, but in her 70s, my mom's age, and got totally offended by the entire book, but kept reading. So was offended from page one, but read all 400 pages, and then sat down and wrote this really lengthy, detailed email to me and to my agent and to my publicist, and just basically said, oh, she's ageist, and these are horrible things to say. But, I mean, it's fiction, and I kill people, too, and they have demented sex, and she wasn't upset about that. She was upset about the fact that I referred. Yeah, I referred to an old character as old, and that pissed her off.
Well, but you didn't really, you weren't, like, being, you weren't being disrespectful. I mean, you were actually, like, these people were, they were kind of badass. I mean, they were bad. So do you
an equal opportunity, you know, fictional murder. And I mean, I had old people killing other old people and old people having sex with other old people. And it wasn't as if
you.
I was picking on old people.
No, exactly. That's exactly
right.
Right.
I'm pretty sure they're excited that they're being, you know, painted in that way. Ooh, we get to have sex in books.
I think most of the feedback has been super positive, and people saying, you know, thank you for allowing us to do all the things that everyone else does. And it never occurred to me not to. It was just a character based on a guy I lived next door to for a year who was, you know, hilarious. He was hilarious, and he said exactly what he meant to say with no filter, and it was awesome.
I will say that I'm like totally, and I think we're running out of time, but I really want to just like say how I'm so happy that there's someone out there that's writing like such a like good strong female characters, even in like psychological thrillers. I mean, it's like I really enjoy that. And
although I don't think I do it on
my
purpose,
one question is, do you really go to like serialkiller.com to like get your stuff?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I do read.
I mean,
some
when
of
I was
that
reading that, it was like, oh my god, I need to go to that website. That is so cool.
You are awesome.
I do a little bit, yeah. I do.
It's
light reading for me.
Okay, Jennifer. I think we're running out of time, and I hate that because I wanted to talk to you more. So I may have to actually, like,
no problem.
Talk to you. I'm going to have to call you. I'm going to have to call you, or I'm going to have to
anytime.
Let me ask Ms. Pam a question. Is it possible for me to go over just a few minutes?
Sure. You absolutely may.
I want to make sure I read from Rob's book. this is, you know, it's very interesting because we are dames in the dark, and we are all ladies who write dark fiction, and you are some of my favorite writers, and I'm so thankful that you all came here today.
Thank
and
you,
tonight.
Jennifer. And thank you
yes.
all. Like,
thank
yes,
you
so
much.
Thank
I wish
you.
Each
Very
one
much.
Of you had your own show, and I wish I could have devoted a whole hour to each of you. Now, one of the reasons that I had Mr. Pierce come on is because his newest book is called Burn in the Heat. And the thing is that this book is awesome, and it's his cutting, fast-paced writing, but he actually has in this book the birth of a kick-ass lady, okay? And I think she could, I'm hoping, I was begging him to make this into a series or at least do a follow-up. So if it's okay with Rob, I'd like to go ahead
Please.
And read that. Is that okay? Good. Now, I'm not very technically advanced. I've got a motor on through to my where I've put this, but it's right here. And once again, it's Rob Pierce, Burn in the Heat. That's his brand new one. And here we go. All right. She opened up the envelope, all hundreds. Jesus, you call this spending money? It's the money, he said. Don't spend it all. Darius shut the envelope, held it in her lap, all the money she had tried to steal. She could die for this. And you'll come back for me when? She asked. If you don't hear from me in 3 days, he said, get out of town. Daria didn't see what choice she had. She was weak right now. She was needy. And she didn't want the life Vern offered. He was the last man she should want. She should leave him and this whole town behind as soon as she's sure she couldn't be tied to Chen. But she couldn't leave with this money. She'd seen what Vern could do. She kissed him, held him close a moment, let go, and wished she didn't have to. Vern drove, but only a few minutes, to downtown Marriott. This is it, he said. It might be, Daria thought. She didn't know if he felt anything for her besides moments of lust. And she had been in the car when he killed a man, and she watched. And she knew it wasn't the only time he had killed a man. That wasn't enough to stop her from wanting him to stay. And now she couldn't leave him, because he'd given her the money, even if he wouldn't come back for her. He'd come back for that. She got out of the car, held the envelope tight, and walked to the hotel entrance. Ba-doom. We're done. That was it.
Good.
Awesome.
Great.
Okay.
He's done an amazing job here. Michelle, you go on.
No, I was going to say that, okay, that means that I got to download that because I got to get that book.
Oh, you do.
Here's Michelle.
Thank you. No, I do. I do. I got to get that book.
I always
liked you.
So I am begging him to do a second in this. He's got a wonderful way. He wrote this lady as exactly as I would want her to be written, and I am flabbergasted and really impressed. So thank you, Rob.
And before we leave, please, we need Marietta Miles. I mean, you are like the dame of the night, and it's, we haven't even like talked about your book, and I hate that. I don't know if it's
well, we're going to. You can talk about it all you want, Michelle. You've got plenty of time left for Rob to read from Marietta's book.
All right. You go, Rob. Read it, and then we can jump on Marietta.
Okay.
I absolutely love this book. I got to edit it, for all due respect. This is a scene from the – there's two novellas in the book, Route 12. This is from the second one, Blood and Sin. Mm-hmm. Her name was Holly. She had come to his house one Sunday afternoon after church. His sermon had been a touchy one, difficult for most to take. He lectured in soapy tones, speaking of avoidance, temperance, and sin. Scriptures and songs slipped from his coy mouth. He had known even then what he did to the girls in church, how they watched him. Caught under their dreamy attention, he at first became excited, titillated. Soon he began to hate them, seeing the girls, the followers, as pitiful and dirty. That evening, he and Holly had relaxed on the front porch, drinking tea brewed in the sun just that afternoon. Daniel had seen her often at church. She volunteered once a month in the nursery, her baby brother one of her charges, and every other Sunday she and her parents sat in the second pew. Soon he asked if she wished to go for a walk. They stepped closely together, rounding the house, heading for the backyard and a path through the woods. Along the way, they brushed against blooming mulberry trees and passed behind a big oak just on the edge of the wood. His warm hand brushed her bare arm. I'm glad you came out tonight. Me too, she answered, watching her step. He stared at her, a hungry hawk, anticipating. When he grabbed her arm violently, she fell to the side, confused and startled by his transformation. Dazed, she lifted her chin, thinking he wished to kiss her and his manners simply awkward. For a moment, she was charmed. His left hand, wide and open, came across her cheek, cracking against her ear, leaving it ringing. The fine, rounded bone under her eye cracked, and her head twisted to the side. Her breath hitched in her throat. Before she could cry, he crushed her mouth with his hand and pushed her to the ground behind the tree. He covered her with his full weight and pinned her head to the ground, both hands over her mouth, pushing down and her teeth bending inward. Roughly, he pushed himself up, putting a knee on each of her small hands. He balled up his right fist and pounded her soft, exposed belly. She screamed behind his hand. Her legs kicked and thrashed. Shut up. Just shut up. He looked down on her, shaking her head with his angry hands, and cocked his head. This is what you get. The back porch light threw a spotlight across the yard, and the back door clattered open. Daniel? His mother trudged from the house, pushing toward the old oak tree. She could see a commotion in the dirt. What is that girl doing here? Get out of here, you, she croaked, getting closer. Just look at you, Daniel whispered, spitting with disgust, rolling off young Holly. She remained perfectly still on the ground, sucking in air, desperate to breathe. Daniel reached under her wrinkled, dusty shirt, pinching her breast hard and scraping his nails across her skin, leaving small, bloody marks. He stood. Mother, it's okay. She was just leaving. And that's the end of that scene.
Aww. Marietta, look at you.
Oh,
how nice and soft and sweet, and you barely say any words, and you're like so ladylike, and then you come out with this. It's like
I really love to gut people like a fish. I really do. It's my thing. No. Thank you, Rob. That was so sweet. Thank you.
It was, Rob. You did really well.
I love the whole book. I love, and that scene was short and one of my favorites, so it worked. And Tom loves you too, even though he's gone. He told me so.
Oh, thank you. I love those guys. Those are like my brothers. I just adore them. And like I said before, I want everybody who spent the evening with us to check back later on onto the comment section of our event page. I'm going to have all the important links for you guys so you can go to all these great magazines and online blogs and visit your favorite writers and their blog spots, because this is really important. Rob is wonderful. Laura and Jennifer and Nancy and Susie and Michelle, thank you guys so much for being here.
And Marietta, thank you.
Thank
and
you.
I sure hope that you have the link that we can order Route 12 from Amazon.
Oh, look at you.
I mean, you have it in print. I mean, it's easy to get, and you can
you're
read
so
it, and you can have it, and sweetie, I mean, you're awesome. I mean,
I am so embarrassed right now.
Don't be embarrassed. Never be embarrassed. You're wonderful. Your books are so, like, so, they're, like, really, like, dark. They're dark, and they scare me, and then when I saw you, it's like, nah, she's
that's
awesome.
Not her. That's not her. It's
I know.
Very funny. You know what? I used to teach Sunday school, so
okay. See, even scarier.
Neither here, Marietta. It's okay.
I love you, Marietta. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, guys. The executive producer. I want to thank Michelle Eisler and also Marietta Miles for being such a fun host tonight for Femme Fatale Dames in the Dark, and also for all of the guests, for Nancy Cole Silverman, Laura Benedict, Jennifer Hillier, Susie Henry, Nikki Murphy, who was represented by Tom Pitts, and Rob Pierce for his own great book and for representing Marietta Miles.
Sure,
thank you so much for being with us for Noir and the Air. This edition of Dames in the Dark will be back next month with a whole new series of Dames and Dark Fiction. Thanks, everybody. Have a great night. Thank
Good
you.
Night.
Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.